Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And on Unspun, we're going to go from chaos in City Hall to chaos in a provincial election to what the hell's happening federally. And oh my gosh, can the U.S. election please end? It is
Unspun, no slow weeks. You know, 270 episodes, Jody, episode 270 today. And I, you know, we've always wanted to have a week where it was quiet.
Just one.
Never.
Remember when we started, though? You know what? This is really important. Just actually, you'd be a fly on the wall with George Affleck and Jody Vance here for one moment. Because after the first episode of Unspun, which, by the way, was a rehearsal that everybody at the Orca was like, no, we're putting this up and we're going to do it every week starting now. So we were like, okay. Everything about it was like, George came up, his son made the jingle. He came up with the graphics. It's like, it's all George. I just talk with him. But our concern was, what are we going to talk about when it's a slow week?
Yeah. And remember the hot topic at that time?
Wood chipper?
Daryl Plekis. And now we are in this situation. I know we were trying to figure out what to start on today because there's so much stuff.
There's so much. Okay, so please. And I swear to our audience that I have no idea what I just watched. Okay. I went on my Twitter because I saw you said F-bomb as one of the things we should talk about. That's how George sends me his ideas in just one word, like, because we already know we speak the secret language.
Yeah.
And I'm like, F-bomb. And sure enough, there it is. I think it was Jazz Joe Hall tweeted it out there. Video in Vancouver City Hall. And it was an exchange between what I thought was aligned party members that went sideways. So George, can you explain what happened and then explain what really happened?
I can't really explain what happened because it was so bizarre. It was some kind of point of order, some kind of procedural, wanting to take a break, dinner.
We were going to stay late.
Rebecca Bly, Sarah Kirby-Young, and Mike Klassen, who's chairing the meeting, committee meeting, not council meeting. Just for those people, I got tweeted at this. People go, why is the mayor not sharing this? The mayor doesn't chair the committee meetings, which are usually on Wednesdays. It's usually a
right,
council.
Okay.
I don't know why. Like, I was like, why isn't the mayor chairing these things? When I was there, I was like, never understood it. There's some rule. Like, cause they didn't used to hold committee meetings in the chamber. Anyways, so they had a different protocol. And you take on, that's where public comes in and speaks at the committee. They don't speak at council.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So there's an exchange where clearly Sarah Kirby-Young was frustrated. And yeah, she dropped the F-bomb sort of,
hell broke loose.
Mike shut off their mics as the chair, those two's mics, but he didn't shut off everybody's mics. And so you could hear, I think it might have been Adrian Carr going, oif, or something. Oh, like, oh my God, like that kind of sound effect. And it was just, so I'd never seen somebody say the F word in the chamber. Maybe George Poole might have. Maybe Harry, sort of thinking some of the guys in the 70s, maybe, I don't know. I'm pretty sure that's, and people are downplaying it. Like, oh, what's the big deal? I'm like, it's a sacrosanct place, you know, the chamber.
I'm going to play it. I found it.
Okay.
So here is, I'm just going to play it over my microphone one second.
Yeah.
Okay. About six. I just want to make that clear to those speakers. Thank you.
Councilor Kirby.
So we have a motion to extend on the floor. Is that correct?
I think we passed it, but.
Well, actually, I was waiting for the queue to speak to it because it is a debatable motion, but I would just say on point of privilege, I'll just say on point of privilege, if I might, Chair, since I have the floor, that I may not be staying, and there is a procedure to allow councillors to comment on it. So we can't just whip in whatever we feel like it, throw it out there without taking the queue. And councillors do have a right to debate motions. So if we could not dispense with procedure and councillors could follow that out of respect for their colleagues, so colleagues have a chance to weigh in to decide now or to advise if they're able to stay, I would appreciate that. This is not the Wild West of fucking procedure. And I apologize for
my gosh, I'm going to call a point of order because
call a point of order, and I will retract.
Highly inappropriate, and
I would like to state
I was in the middle of speaking.
And then they got muted, and so that is Councillor Sarah Kirby-Young with the F-bomb and Councillor Bly saying, whoa, wait, whoa.
Oh, yeah, point of order.
Point of order, and it just, you could, once you get to that point, like it gives me kind of the heebie-jeebies. Once you get to a certain point, because up to a certain space, it sounds like, okay, this is political jargon speak, count of, portent of, I have the floor, I did that, blah, blah, blah. And you can see, and all of a sudden it just goes snap.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I got tortured a lot in that chamber. And
tell me,
you know, you just don't snap. I mean, you got to keep it together. You're, as I tweeted out, you know, we pay the big bucks for these people to be the adults in the room to represent us, not to be children. This is a very childish behavior. But the deeper issue is clearly there's tension either between those two or Mike Klassen or all of the ABC. I had rumors that there was a lot of tension. There is rifts happening, that which is not unusual in a caucus, but certainly within a 2-year period. They've only been there 2 years. We're only seeing that just now. We'll get this later with the federal liberals after 10 years. So after 2 years to see that kind of tension and disrespect to your fellow counselors, which is Mike Klassen as chair of ABC, Rebecca Bly on her left in that shot, ABC, what is really going on is the question that I think we need to ask. I think, and we've got now a by-election coming up because of Christine Boyle being elected. So it's going to be very interesting. That by-election probably won't happen. It's got to happen, I think, within by June, I think, next year. ABC will take its time because right now it's great. They don't have one less person, but so against them, which, because Christine Boyle is one city. For those people, again, who don't understand, Vancouver has very party politics. We have one party that dominates, ABC, and then there's one city and Cope, and then no Green, and then no Cope anymore in council. So, yeah, I just think there's something else going on here within that caucus. And you and I have talked a lot about caucus and United Caucus. And once cracks start to show in the caucus,
you got problems.
You got problems.
You've taught me that. And the insight into this, because you really have to be quite the nerd to get that deep into municipal politics to understand, because most of us, and I count myself as somebody who's quite informed and engaged, I'd like to know what's going on in my community, et cetera, et cetera. The intra workings of council, the more I learn about it, the more I laugh harder when people ask me if I'm ever running for city hall, because I'm like, oh, no, I would not be able to.
You're not going to run the by-election?
No. No, it's wild, though. It's wild. Like, in watching that, like, I saw most of these counselors on Monday at the BC Restaurant and Food Services Hall of Fame Awards dinner. And they were all at one table and we had chit chats and everybody, you know, but the illusion could be there. When you said, you know, at some points working together in this environment, you will see rifts. In my mind, I was like, in any workplace, I'm always astonished at the rifts that form within a team that's working against another team, like working for the business of somebody, right? Like competing restaurants or competing radio stations or competing magazines, like fill in the blank who you're competing with. I always wondered about how we're fighting internally when we're actually competing against someone else. And maybe there's that frustration that boils out of that, like bubbles up over that. But does it have perhaps something to do with, in this particular instance, the sort of shuffling that was announced where there will be some changes in the representation within council and for the city of Vancouver, the deputy mayor, et cetera, you know, the mayor announcing that he's basically shuffling things around, which, you know, we can talk about.
Well, they never used to do that. Your deputy mayor was a monthly switch. It was every councilor used to get a chance to be deputy mayor. Every month you get a new deputy mayor. It wasn't Vision in its final term decided to make a point.
Who did?
Vision Vancouver and Gregor Robinson in their final term decided to make a more formal structure where there was a deputy mayor for the entire time. And I think it was Raymond Lully at first, and then I think it was pushed it to Andrew Reimer, I think. But it's which is weird, and you know, because why? We didn't vote for a deputy mayor. We voted for councillors. So just
right.
I think there, you know, and now that Sarah Kirby is the first lady of Yale Town, her husband won the NDP seat there. I'm wondering if there's something going on here deeper. I never thought of Sarah Kirby Young as an NDPer, but maybe she is, and maybe this is a play. Maybe it's subconscious on her part, but NDP want control back of our council that they had for so long with Vision. Now ABC, he says he's all friendly, but ABC is pretty tight with the former NPA people and the business community. And so NDP don't look at ABC as a friendly party to them, and the union sure don't. So I would be curious to see what the process is. And Sarah Kirby-Young is ambitious. She wants to be mayor, like everybody on that council. But, you know, she certainly has, I think, is clearly an interest in that job. There's a by-election coming up. Is another party going to start up? You know, she's done it before.
Right. That's right. Okay, so explain that. So I know what you mean by that, but somebody watching or listening right now.
Yeah, well, all the councillors last term bailed on the NPA and then were independents and then joined ABC and became the ABC, which then took over control of the council in the last election. So if you're that fickle with the parties you're a part of and you're that willing to jump ship.
Jump. Yeah.
Which I am not, I don't play that game. I think you commit to a party, you commit to it.
Loyalty.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'm surprised that, first of all, I was surprised that her husband ran for the NDP. I always thought of him as a federal conservative, knowing him quite well through the NPA. He was, on the board of the NPA. Very surprised that he ran for the NDP and then won against Melissa DeGenova in a riding that generally votes conservative. So, very strange.
Perhaps that was it. Perhaps that he was known in one way, even though he was running under a different banner that wasn't under the BC, the Conservative Party of BC's banner, because as we can pivot to that now, some people wouldn't vote for the BC Conservative Party because of some of the fringe politics there, because perhaps if there hadn't been the tinfoil hat wearers or the climate deniers or the anti-vaxxers or whatever, the anti-LGBTQ2S+ people within that Conservative Party, they might right now be sitting with a majority government. And instead we're sitting in this waiting pattern, this holding pattern, right? So let's talk about what did you see happen in this election at last Saturday that feels like it's still underway?
Yeah, we won't know it for sure until the weekend. And there's that whole hung parliament we might have. If the Conservatives get one more seat back, we got a tie, basically. And there'll be an election in 3 months. If the NDP keep control, there'll be an election probably in 2 years. So it was an interesting night. There were two ridings in Vancouver that I thought they were going to get. Yaletown was one of them. The other was Langara. Yeah. They would have got Langara, I think, if they had Jamie Stein in there. But he got the boot for – he was the BC United candidate. Full disclosure, I was working with him on his campaign. Great guy. Working really hard and probably would have won that riding was lost by 300 votes, I think. So he would have probably picked up those 300 votes. That candidate that did win is quite controversial. And then Yaletown was surprising. And I think you're right. It's exactly what you described. I think there are a lot of people in that community who are that federal liberal, plus the whole, the gay, the whole, all that stuff. I think
all of it.
And going, I don't think so. But, 700 votes Melissa lost by, which is not a ton. It's just hard to get people to vote in Yaletown.
And both of them have name recognition, right? Like that largely can be the thing that gets people out. It's like, I don't know. They sound familiar.
Melissa, I'm surprised because she would have a very good recognition. And generally done quite well in Yaletown as a counselor. So if you look at the voting pattern,
she's a very hardworking politician. Active.
Mm-hmm.
I would go so far as to say fearless. She got a lot of pushback, a lot of people coming at her in a lot of ways. And she just stood in the storm, whether you agree with her politics or not. I've watched that woman be rolled and it's hard as who has been rolled.
Totally. And but harassment wise, there's all the whole crime issue, which we all, as a Yaletown resident, I would have thought people said, NDP, you're messing our neighborhood up. The crime's down. And it just didn't happen. So the vote in Vancouver seemed to be status quo on the crime issue for NDP and the drug issue, I guess, because they got
I think people realize that it's not just a BC problem. I think that's what played into it a little bit, is that it's not just exclusive to here. It is happening across the country and really across North America and in some instances the world. And, so it's not as much as it was a talking point or trying to become a wedge issue. I don't believe it was as much of one when it came to the actual casting of a ballot. So clearly this is a huge loss for David Eby, though, right? As you had mentioned, you know, months ago when everybody was like, are you calling an election? Are you calling an election? And he's like, no. You're like, oh, they must be seeing some numbers that I'm not seeing. Because, you know, why not now?
What did we call last week? We called it a minority from NDP. Didn't I call it that?
Again. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, everybody. Sorry.
Oh, it's wild. But so what do you think happens?
I went to a couple of parties that night. I had to go to BC United, had a private event that I went to because I had been working on the campaign, which was
in BC United.
BC United, Gordon Campbell did a viewing party of watching TV. He also did a Q&A. But what was interesting is after that, there was I was there. I came just sort of the end of that. And then we were watching television with a bunch of former BC, you know, mostly staffers who are still working for the party. And it was interesting because they were, I can't say what they were saying, but they were a person would come up on the screen that was winning or leading. And the comments are, whether it be NDP.
Running commentary.
It was sort of inside, like they didn't care there. It was really quite interesting to hear these comments like, oh, that guy does this and that. You're like, oh, that's interesting. You know, just a little funny, more fun. It was quite fun. It was fun. There's a group of people that I know quite well. And I sat with them for a while. So that was fun. And then I went to the BC Conservative Party, which was Melissa had already left when I got there. And John Cooper was there who got killed.
He got destroyed.
Poor John. He had a couple beers in him by the time I got there. But he was okay. He was cool. He was booking a trip, I think, the next morning to Palm Springs.
Good. So, you know what?
You had the right attitude.
When he joined this race, you and I both were like, oh.
What are you doing, John? Wrong riding.
What are you doing? Go enjoy your grandbabies. You've done good work.
Or live in a place you can win. But they were mostly sad. I'm like, you guys, what are you, crazy? You got from 0 to 45, 46 seats. Almost a majority. That is unheard of. And they're like, yeah, but I think they were expecting 55. I don't know what they were expecting. I think all the
polling
was saying it was going to be dead heat and it was going to be look like a minority, but I think they thought there was a wave coming that was, you know, much stronger than it was. And it didn't come out that way. And I think it was because NDP ran that fear campaign, which, you know, we talk a lot about the kinds of campaigns you run.
Yeah.
This was stay the course, be afraid of those guys. Stay the course. We got this for you. We had to give us a chance. Had a chance to really prove himself. Yet that kind of campaign. So, for the most part, even though I would say the NDP failed miserably at getting the seats that they should have got, they still, it looks like they won, but we'll know on Monday.
And we were talking about, you know, governments having their time in power, in office, and then there just being a change election. And there was part of that, you know, there was no real discussion about what we've been through in these last, whatever, 8 years, 9 years of this government. And we'll talk about that on a federal level as well, because that's very much, you know, associated with what we're seeing federally. And as we make the move from provincial politics to federal politics, how interesting did you find it that when the buzz started around the 24 names in the Liberal caucus, you know, asking for Justin Trudeau to step down, that the first real, like, well, if he does, I'm in kind of thing was Christy Clark.
Yes, Christy. I've heard that rumor for a while. I heard she's brushing up on her French. I've heard about that for quite a while. And as we said earlier about the ABC, the caucus splitting, it's over for Trudeau. And I think I said he'd be gone by December.
You did.
In January.
You did. I remember it.
I always say that that's still true. I think that he's got to do it before December because he's got to give the time to have a leadership race. Christy knows it. Everybody knows it. It's just a matter of time. He's the Bloc Québécois came out today saying, you know, time to go, basically.
Today's the day.
Yeah.
They did their announcement on reducing immigration and focusing more on assisting those with temporary status to become permanent residents to help with the bolster the workforce, which was, you know, the reasoning behind opening up to more immigration. I was watching the press briefing this morning and I was like, well, there you go. Okay.
You and I are both trying to get our kids out to school.
My kid's still in the shower. How about yours? Yeah. So interesting here. The one thing, just going back to Christy Clark real quick, and maybe you can explain this to me, because when we talked about the change of the name of the BC Liberal Party, there was a lot to be said for the fact that there's confusion around how different the federal liberals are from the BC liberals, right? But when people would go into the voters booth, somebody who traditionally would vote federally liberally, which is further left of the BC Liberal Party, which is a conservative party, which became BC United, which is now the Conservative Party of British Columbia, basically. How does Christy Clark come out and say, I'm a liberal, I've always been a liberal, and I believe in, and I'm like, you were a were a BC liberal.
She was a federal liberal. Her and Mark were very involved in federal liberals for a long time.
But it's interesting to me in my little brain.
It doesn't make sense.
Thank you. It doesn't. Then I don't feel like I'm being like crazy made. Because I'm like, what's happening? Yeah. So there's a reason why, and that takes me back to the name change for BC United and thinking, why did they do that? Why did they change the name? And can they change it back?
Well, no, because, you know, I think the Conservatives did well enough that they can show they can win. So that's, they've proven in this election that they are only two seats away from winning. So they don't need the Liberals.
No, but BC United. So BC United's over.
Yeah, BC United's over.
It's over. It's that party is just like, rip it up and toss it away. It'll never happen again.
Forever. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense to me then. If it's you know, because we have the three parties. Okay, so now what happens? We've got the Conservative Party of BC. We've got the NDP. Dead heat, locked in. Two ridings to still be decided. We'll know in a couple of days. If those two ridings that right now appear to be going to the NDP, but we need recounts. Some come down to like less than 100 votes. It's going to take until this weekend when the vote counts, because all the ballots that are cast outside of constituencies have to be counted. It's all very complex. I watched so much of this.
It doesn't usually change things. Historically, that doesn't really make an impact, but we'll see.
Right. Right. So if we're left with this and we're back to 2017, maybe.
Worse.
Reflecting
back to my, with no Darryl Plekis willing to cross the floor and be, betray the party. As far as we know, maybe there is a BC United person or a BC Conservative person who's willing to flip over and be the speaker like Plekis did, which gave the BC NDP the ability to govern for those, what was it, 3 years? So it's very similar. After the weekend, we'll see what the numbers are. If they can get a BC Conservative to move over, that maybe somebody who was maybe BC United and they were like, and more of a federal liberal, maybe, but I don't think so. I think Rustad in his speech made it very clear that he's not going to let this government last long. If there's a way to just topple this government, he's going to do it. And given the situation and these two Greens who now have a leader who's not elected, who's going to stay on as leader, such a strange thing. It's such a precarious situation that the chances of it working are slim at best. So
I found myself sitting in the chair at CKNW having the first discussion. It was Drex and I who had John Horgan and Professor Weaver in for the first conversation once the bromance began between the Greens and the NDP in 2017 as they started moving forward. And the tone of their, you know, discussion and the hope to create, I mean, we didn't even know we were just 18 months away from a pandemic at that point. Like, we had no idea what was coming down the pipe, and we don't. And we don't know as a province now what might be coming in extreme weather issues or wildfires or, you know, so many things that need to be the focus here. And the partisan politics is just, we'll get to what's happening in the United States. I can't wait for November 5th. I just can't wait. Yeah. But the one thing that really sort of stuck with me in all of my watching of all the networks, loved Richard Zussman on the big board, man, that guy knows his politics. And I was watching Rob Shaw and Check as well. Thought it was great.
Okay.
It was very interesting. But when it came to Rustad's speech, the BC Conservative leader, John Rustad's speech, when he said, I'm going to do everything I can to make governing difficult. I thought, oh, that's not what we need. We don't need it to be more difficult. Like, I'm exhausted by that. Like, our tax dollars are being wasted.
There's going to be so much for us to unspin.
Oh, my. Yeah. Well, there you go. There's content for us. Fair. I feel better now.
Trying to feel better. A full cut here.
That's right. Okay. Trump versus Harris. We're less than 2 weeks. What are we, 12 days out now? 13 days out. What do you think?
I think she's going to take it, no problem.
Really?
Yeah.
Great. Great.
I'm basing it on my favorite analysis. So, you know, he hasn't changed his position. So, I just think that, I think there's a lot of polling that's showing some momentum. And I think that it reminds me of Christy Clark 2014, that they had all this data. They didn't want to tell anybody that there was going to be something else that was going to happen. The Democrats want you to be scared of America. They want you to vote Trump. They don't want to show the real data, but there are so many like YouTubers, everybody's gone through it, and they show them the data is just on her side. So I would be very surprised if Trump won, but I just think that people will go to the polls and go, yeah, no.
They have to keep, the Democrats have to keep that you need to actually vote. I mean, we're seeing that here in our provincial election because, I mean, some of these ridings are, like you said, coming down to under 100 ballots, right? And cast. It does matter.
It does. And actually, interesting, I didn't know this, but I was watching yesterday that every election since 2018, or 2016, the numbers have been, the amount of people voting has gone up in America by a lot. Yeah. In fact, Trump had more votes in 2020 than he did in 2016. So he still lost. So I thought, that's interesting. I mean, obviously there's more people, but I think that there is a motivation to vote on both sides of the political spectrum over there in America. So,
but if every Democrat votes, they win. But the problem with the Democrats is they're like, oh, the reality TV guy's not going to win. I don't need to vote.
Yes.
You actually have to vote. And I think the Roe versus Wade being overturned is going to bring out women and young women. And people will be like, it's Taylor Swift. You know what? It doesn't hurt that Taylor Swift and Oprah and Sarah Jessica Parker and, you know, Bruce Springsteen and name, even Liz Cheney and Dick Cheney and all like the Republicans coming forward and Mark Milley and Mike Kelly and all of it. Like,
if you can get enough 20-year-old women in those swing states to show up because of Taylor Swift, that's what you need.
Or because they might want to have babies, and if they accidentally get pregnant, they might want to terminate a pregnancy if they decide to. I think that more than, and even if they're in a very staunchly Republican family, they could not talk about it, go in and mark the ballot.
It
and
is
go out and be
ballot.
Like, oh yeah, MAGA all the way, whatever, right? Like, because it's ruining families, it's ruining friendships, it's breaking up marriages, it's like the divisiveness. And I don't know what are your thoughts on the rhetoric from Trump? Is it just because he's leaning in to get those disgruntled white guys motivated?
Like the one last night, you see the spank my bank his daughter, daddy's back. What in the world is going on? It's like, this is talking about children in the room. Like, first of all, spanking is illegal. The parent, I'm not even American, but I'm pretty sure it's illegal in America.
It is.
And it's super creepy. Daddy's back. Very. What is that all about? Gross. Sorry, but that's just
there's so much about it that is so.
But the reviews were in and it was like lapped. People loved it. They loved it.
Well, Joe Rogan on Friday for Trump. So he's going on the Joe Rogan and then the town hall with Kamala Harris last night on CNN. Did you see that?
I saw a bit of it. Yeah, it got a bit boring, but
I thought it opened really strong. I thought Anderson Cooper did a very good job in opening it up with not a softball question at all. And then held her feet to the fire. She's talking.
She called him a fascist, which was surprising. She called Trump a fascist.
Yeah.
So that was a big change.
And she also said he's calling himself a fascist. So a dictator on day one. But I found it really interesting that the frustration of the people who are inside, like you and I talk about all the time, the things that we hear over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, people who are so invested in watching everything are exhausted by her talking points. She sounds too scripted. It's like, no, she's trying to get her message across. And she doesn't just say it once or twice. By the time we're sick of it, some people are hearing it for the very first time. It's the old adage of advertising, right? How many times have you heard 105.88 to 300 Empire, right? Like, we have heard it a million times because we're watching it or listening to it that million times.
Yes. Much like my Cloridale Rodeo theme, if they never picked it up, that I wrote. Want to hear it?
Yes, I do.
It never got picked. They never went with it. I used to work with them doing their marketing, but Gloria Rodeo Country Fair, May long weekend. See you there. Thank you.
Why is that not a thing?
I know. Copyright George Affleck.
That's brilliant. I honestly could not have told you what weekend Cloverdale Rodeo was.
May long weekend. See you there. Thank you very much.
Love that. I don't think we can top that. I think we just need to let it go at that. Let me see how our time is. Yeah, 29 minutes and 39 seconds. You can be found on Twitter at George
_ whoosh.
Affleck. I am at Jody Vance, at Jody Vance, Jody with a Y, at Jody Vance on my Twitter. Find George on TikTok. I'm there too. Instagram's also good. You can find us anywhere. It's Unspun Podcast. Like, subscribe, comment, share with your friends. We're here every week, apparently. 270 episodes in, George.
Feels like just yesterday.
Doesn't it? Wood chipper.
Bye.
Bye.